again, if you have a personal relationship or can make a personal relationship, you know, that's where you're going to get more attention. And if you're going to get more attention, then you go with that option every time.
That's Craig Snyder. I'm Steve Cleveland. This is Sync Club. We're talking with Craig Snyder, Director of Industry Relations at Reverb Nation. Hey, Craig, welcome to the club.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? What got you where you are today?
Well, you know, I think the music business is something that I kind of saw myself getting into even as a young kid. You know, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with liner notes. And I had a very limited budget. You know, when I was younger, it was basically the number of lawns that I could mow or, you know, chores or babysitting. And, you know, I would take whatever money I could and I would go to the used record store in my hometown of Oxford, Ohio, called Looney T-Birds. And, you know, literally I gave myself an education in music through the record store. And, you know, I think a lot of the things that we talk about today, like music discovery and, you know, building a community and finding fans, you know, are all things that can, you know, relate back to then. But, you know, really, I had my first job after college producing radio on Sirius XM. Mm-hmm. I met little Steven Van Zandt from Bruce Springsteen's band and
sure.
kind of happenstance through a friend of a friend. And they were looking to hire someone that knew Pro Tools. And, you know, I happened to be in a band a couple of years before and decided to learn Pro Tools. And I never thought that would really, you know, be useful for anything other than, you know, my home recording projects. And lo and behold, you know, ended up producing audio. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's pretty funny because I was essentially producing podcasts. Yeah, you know, just throughout my career, I've done a variety of things. I'm someone that is very fascinated by how people consume music and how they discover it. And I, you know, certainly had a lot of time with radio, but, you know, it's taken me down this road of, you know, working with bands as a manager and starting record labels and, you know, working in publishing and working at an agency and understanding that connection between brands and bands. So it's something that all started from Looney T-Birds in Oxford, Ohio, though.
Yeah, it's fun how that you have that connection that it just kind of.
Yeah.
And I love that you basically gave yourself an education through liner notes. I mean, I have another friend who kind of claims the same kind of thing where. This guy's just an amazing session drummer, and he could, like, if you mention a record, and he can tell you, like, all these facts about that record just because he had that vinyl at one point, and he read and memorized these notes, and it was just,
yeah,
you know, and I think at least for part of the digital revolution in music, I think that's something that we kind of lost there for a while. I really miss the liner notes. I used to love just like reading, you know, what, like sometimes there was like just something hidden in there, like a quote or something, you know, brilliant. Or, you know, like on The Cure's Disintegration album, it says this record was mixed to be played loud or something to that effect. And, you know, it's just like little gems like that. I kind of miss that with some of the digital things that either I'm not looking in the right place or it doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, and, you know, at the time, you know, if you were a fan, you could actually write to your favorite artists because most of them would, you know, include a P.O. box or an address.
That's right.
So, you know, it was for me, if I wanted to know how, you know, John Curley got a guitar sound on an Afghan Whigs record, I could write him. And right. He would respond.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Sync Club is all about helping independent artists and songwriters understand the world of sync licensing. And one of the common threads that our guests have brought to the table in one way or another is like this concept of collaboration or building a team. And so we had Randy Shurko on one of the earlier episodes, and he's one of the authors of Making Money with Music. And he talked about do it yourself doesn't mean do it alone.
Yep.
So it seems like some of the work that you do currently is like helping artists build a team. Is that something that you can speak to specifically with regards to like sync placements or?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, when you're talking about an artist team, you're typically talking about a manager, an agent, a label, a publisher, a PRO, and, you know, there's a business manager, a lot of other people along the way. You know, as I see, the easiest way to build a name and to actually start making money as an artist, it's absolutely sync. The reality that most artists don't understand is that you can find a lot of folks to actually pitch your music, and you may not get a big fat advance, but you know, you're not going to worry about signing a crazy long-term exclusive deal. And, you know, you're able to, you know, have someone actively shop the songs you're writing. And, you know, I think when you're looking at building a team, the thing that I always tell artists is really, you know, it's about, you know, finding someone that understands what you're doing, understands where you're coming from. You know, I can't tell you how many artists will go hire the most expensive publicist. They'll try to, you know, just get themselves in like a big name publishing catalog.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, like, that boutique person can understand where you're coming from and really is going to take time and actually listen to your songs, especially when you're creating new songs. You know, that's the person that's actually going to have success in a placement. You know, I think not enough artists are trying to find a good fit as opposed to just finding any fit.
Well, yeah, one of my fears would be to sign with somebody who was who had maybe like a huge catalog, and you're just, you know, you get overlooked, or
sure,
you're on a roster with bands that are the, you know, the it bands or whatever. So it's like finding that right fit. And do you have any suggestions on how to go about finding somebody who can pitch your music where somebody might look?
Yeah. So this is the answer I give for most everything for a young band getting involved in the music industry. But, you know, for any artist that's looking to find a publisher, or, you know, typically the two things I hear artists ask about the most is how do I get good syncs? And how do I get that opening slot on a tour? And the answer is the same. And the question I always ask there is, who are you friends with? You know, what are the bands that are one step ahead of you that are coming from your scene? Because most likely, if someone likes that band that kind of sounds like your band, or that artist that sounds like your music, they're probably also going to like your music, and you can also get a warm intro from your friend's band. And, you know, quite honestly, you know, we live in a time where there are more artists than ever creating more music than ever has, you know, been out in the marketplace, and it's about getting attention. And if you have someone that can create a warm intro for you, you got to do that every time.
Yeah, no, it seems like I just read somewhere, oh yeah, on your blog, Craig says that your estimate about 1 million songs a month are being added to the streaming services.
Yep, and that's probably a very conservative estimate. Wow.
So it seems like this is kind of a reoccurring idea. It's about building relationships and about networking and kind of like as other people succeed, you succeed with them. So you kind of grow as a group.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at any music scene from the past, you know, 50 years, 60 years, yeah, bands, artists grow together. You know, I look at, you know, the New York scene that I was part of when I first moved there in the early 2000s. But, you know, you go see the Strokes, and then there was this little band called the Yeah Yeah Yeahs that was opening for them. Or you'd come to a listening party and you'd realize that the bartender was in the Rapture.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like those scenes, they grow together, you know, because whenever a band like the Strokes gets signed, or you know, any band, any artist, we live in a world where everyone wants their own Strokes. They want their own version of that artist. They want to be able to, capitalize on that. So, yeah. So I think it's really like building a scene, making friends, building those relationships. No,
I think that is really super good advice. Actually, it's funny. We interviewed Ted Hudson, who was also from New York, and he mentioned the Strokes, and he mentioned that it was like a really good time to be in New York because that scene was really, really hot because of the Strokes, kind of is what he basically said. And his band got signed and did some cool things.
Yeah, what band was he in?
He was in the Damwells. Okay, so yeah, cool band. And they're still around and stuff. If you liked your music, you should definitely go back and listen to what he's up to now. So he's a fascinating guy, just super nice.
Cool.
So on that theme of building teams,
sure.
You'd mentioned a publisher, and that's something that I think a lot of people are maybe either misinformed about or don't fully understand. So when does a band or an artist or somebody who's interested, at what point do they need a publisher? Or
yeah, sure. Well, I'd say the first stop for any artist should be signing up with a PRO. So I think a lot of artists don't really understand some of the mechanics behind how they can get paid. But ultimately, and I'm sure you touch on this in other podcasts, but ultimately there are, artists get paid for composition of a song, and, the person that owns a recording gets paid as well. And really what a publisher does is it represents the songwriter. PROs are actually out there to kind of automatically collect a lot of those royalties for non-interactive listens, which would be, just things like digital radio play and having your music played in a Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville restaurant, which I'm not endorsing, by the way. But when I look at artists and I look at they're trying to build a team, definitely sign up with the PRO. We've got really two big options in the U.S. and then a third pretty good more boutique option in CSAC.
Right.
So you have ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. And, I would say, again, if you have a personal relationship or can make a personal relationship at one of them, that's where you're going to get more attention. And if you're going to get more attention, then you go with that option every time because they're basically, collecting the same money for you. Mm-hmm. But as I look at, the right time to bring on a publisher, what I would say is, you probably have to have music out in the marketplace for a publisher to actually want to work with you.
Okay.
That would be how most publishers want to sign. If you go to Nashville, that's more of a songwriting engine and you're just trying to pitch your songs for, bigger artists to, perform them, then maybe you want to be courting a publisher earlier. But, if you're a performing artist, which I would say is the mass majority of artists that I work with, especially at Reverb Nation, wait until you have music out in the marketplace or you're about to have it out in the marketplace, because ultimately publishers want to hear what you're working with.
Okay.
Ideally, you've had a little success too. So that way you have a way to differentiate your music from, a million other tracks that came out that month.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be big things, but, who is someone friends with? Who does someone trust? I think music journalists, if you're able to get covered by the right journalist and, this person that works at, Downtown Music happens to see their favorite journalist is covering this artist and is raving about them, then, that's a good opportunity to open that door.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, I would also say with publishers, there are a lot of, big, libraries where basically they are willing to represent you either exclusively for a short period of time or not exclusively. And, the thing I tell emerging artists is, do non-exclusive all day. If someone wants to represent you non-exclusively, sign a bunch of them.
I've often wondered that, what is the advantage other than maybe just a few percentage points to being exclusive? I mean, is there any that you would go, yeah, there's a point where you should be exclusive?
Yeah, I would say if someone's having considerable success with your catalog, like let's say you have like three non-exclusive, you know, sync deals, and one person's really having a lot of success and is really, you know, putting that best foot forward to shop your catalog, that might be a reason to go exclusive to further incentivize them to continue pitching your catalog and know that they're not going to potentially have three people pitching the same music supervisor on the same song, you know? Certainly, if a publisher is willing to give you an advance, you know, they're paying for that exclusivity. You know, I think it really comes down to, you know, having trust or, you know, understanding, you know, where someone's really going to work your music hard. And, you know, a lot of exclusive deals, you can get out of them, you know, in 60 or 90 days. So if you trust someone and you feel like they understand your music, that's another reason to go exclusive.
Sure.
But, you know, certainly if you're not seeing the results that you want, then, you know, it's probably an opportunity to have a good conversation.
Okay. What piece of advice would you give someone looking to break into sync licensing?
Well, there are probably a couple answers, but the one thing I would say with, you know, breaking into sync licensing is just be very, very organized. Make it easy for people to pitch your music. You know, one thing that I think is important is having your lyrics together, having it be really easy to understand, you know, co-writers, having instrumental files, you know, just having everything that makes it so easy that someone wants to time and time again, you know, pitch your music. Because, you know, oftentimes for young bands, they're getting that 25th hour call where they need something that sounds like a much more expensive artist, and maybe you have that solution, but they need it really, really quick.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that seems like the whole thing is just being able to move quickly in that space, because it seems like they're always behind or right up against a deadline. And by the way, you answered a way better answer than my answer, so I love it.
What is your answer? I'm curious, actually.
You know, it seems like the one thing is just building relationships. You know, it seems like that's the one thing in sync. Is getting, you know, getting in good with some folks, you know, building a network of people that like your music and like you and see that, you know, you are responsive and organized. But I like your answer a lot better. So,
well, you have a very good answer too. I mean, it is a relationship business. And I think even with faceless pop stars that are charting on SoundCloud, it still comes down to who you know.
Yeah. So, you know, reading on your LinkedIn page and your blog, you mentioned this term that kind of intrigued me, because I'm not exactly sure what it means. You bring up this thing called transactional marketing. And just out of curiosity, what is that? Because it seems like I should know that.
Yeah. So I would say we've kind of gotten into this period where we evaluate the success of a song launch or a campaign through the number of likes that you get on social media. You know, we are, you know, basically advertisers are paying for certain CPMs where basically they want to pay $15 for 1,000 impressions. Mm-hmm. When I say transactional marketing, I'm talking about exactly this, where you're trying to, you know, build the transaction and then move on to the next one. You know, it's like banking. It's really kind of not very exciting to me. And what I like to see with marketing is having, you know, more personal touch and being human. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting out of this mode of just basically, you know, posting because you have to post. The reality is, like, transactional marketing, it doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't feel good to the artist. And I think, you know, certainly fans see through it. So, you know, why are we doing transactional marketing if it doesn't feel good for the fan and it doesn't feel good for your own music? So, you know, I think that's something I'm constantly challenging.
People don't like to be, you know, BS'd, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you hate when you get robocalls. I mean, that's essentially what you're doing to fans when you're just, you know, and believe me, I get that we have to do this, you know, because ultimately if you're an artist and you're on the road, you need people to show up to your show to buy tickets. That way you can pay for gas and eat, you know, sleep in a hotel as opposed to a van. So, you know, I get there is a certain level of paying for some impressions, but, you know, I think it's really like, you can't just do what everyone else is doing and that isn't working. You know, you got to figure out a voice and a reason that people are going to, you know, pay attention to what you're typing, you know, on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So kind of a related topic, you know, you've had the opportunity to work with some major brands. Could you give us some insight on what it's like to work with some of these major brands and maybe what these relationships are like and how
sure. You know,
licensing for a brand experience is different from maybe licensing for Sync?
Yeah. So the thing I would say with brands is there's a right way to approach brands and there's a lot of wrong ways to do it. And, you know, I think the brand deal is very much like a Sync. It's something that a lot of artists aspire to be, which is really funny to me because I remember, you know, in the 80s hearing Mick Jones from The Clash talk about there are Pepsi artists and then there's everyone else.
Right.
So
it used to be a sellout kind of notion, right?
Totally, totally. Working with brands was selling out. Now it's anything but, you know, and I feel like that millennial generation, they love a good brand collaboration. So, you know, my biggest advice to artists, especially those just getting started that may not be represented by a label or a publisher or someone that can really have those relationships already intact, is to just understand how brands typically work. Some brands will have in-house music people. Those people oftentimes will make themselves very, very open. They want to talk to artists. You know, I've given an example like Red Bull. You know, Red Bull is doing a lot with their music academy, and they're people that want to speak to that emerging tier of artists. And then you have, you know, a lot of your more traditional CPGs, consumer packaged goods, and food brands, food and bev, and those kind of more traditional brands. They hire an agency because guess what? They don't want to have that personal touch. They want to bring in someone that is an expert.
Sure.
And, you know, I would say I see lots of artists, you know, tweeting at brands and it's probably a waste of their time.
Right.
You know, again, it's going to come down to relationships. You know, again, it is really about understanding, you know, who's working with that brand. And, you know, the artists that I've worked with that have gotten it, you know, are, you know, artists that not only look at what they need, which is often money and exposure, but they also really try to succinctly understand what a brand is trying to achieve. You know, I can give you a perfect example if that helps.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So I worked with a candy brand called Mamba. You can think of them as like a German Starburst. We did a couple of years of music programming for them, where we were basically bringing in music to help market their product. And one of the years we decided we wanted to do something where we could use the candy to create art, create music, and that could be physically, that could be whatever way that the artist wanted to interpret it. And we had a great artist called Slow Magic, EDM artist, actually from Denver. And, you know, when we worked with Slow Magic, you know, he really came to the table and wanted to understand, well, what is the brand really looking for? Oh, okay. Well, they want me to create something that's different and unique, and they want to be able to touch on some of the brand goals of creativity. And, you know, with Slow Magic, we basically gave him money to create a MIDI controller that he built out of Mamba candy and basically programmed each flavor of candy with a sound and created a you know, all the sounds from scratch, you know, wrappers crumpling up, chewing, throwing the candy, you know, at a window, and basically created this really cool custom song. And it felt authentic to the artist. It felt authentic to the brand. You know, the response was amazing. It actually got picked up by Nerdist, the videos. It was so successful that we ended up going back to Slow Magic and saying, what else can you create? And they said, well, I need to build some new drum pads. What if I build them using your candy? And again, you know, we gave them some cash. It felt authentic to the artist. It felt authentic to the brand, create some content. And, you know, when you have, you know, something that works for both sides, you often will achieve the goals that you want, which, you know, with this, with brands, they are very transactional. They are trying to grow an audience. They are basing a lot of success on metrics, on impressions. But, right. You know, we did something authentic and we achieved it very easily. Which I can't say for every brand campaign that I've worked on.
I mean, that's a very, very good example of, you know, win-win for the artist and brand. You know, even on smaller scale things like YouTube campaigns, it's like one of those things where you probably still have to go through an agency to get to some of these brands. Would you agree to that?
Yes and no. You know, I think mm-hmm. a lot of artists are really focused on big brands, but again, I would tell artists, like, look locally. You know, Floyd's Barbershop in Nashville does a lot of really good, you know, local campaigns that end up, you know, going national. You know, they, I remember when Chris Shiflett from the Foo Fighters was just starting his podcast. I think Floyd's was his first sponsor, and he might have even just been trading haircuts for you know, a slot on his podcast. But, you know, there are probably brands that are local to you that if you come to them with an idea and you tell them what you're looking for and ask them what they're looking for, you can probably, you know, find that brand. And, you know, I would say mm-hmm. look at the exploding brewery space with beers and ciders. You know, there are so many brands that are, you know, can have a budget of a couple hundred to a couple thousand dollars and maybe could support a tour or pay for, you know, placement in a music video.
Right. That's, you know, the kind of thinking that, you know, I think everything starts small, doesn't it?
And it does. Local. Yeah. Start small, start local. If you have success small and local, you know, that's the kind of thing you bring to someone that's a little bit bigger. You know, it's like the old school music industry. You started with a single. If you had enough good singles, you got an EP. If you had enough good songs, you know, after your EP, guess what? You were given an album.
I guess the age of the internet has kind of twisted everybody a little bit where it's easy to get to thinking large.
Sure.
But, you know, the internet still works well locally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, on the sync space, I mean, I've done sync deals with artists where there's a band that I manage where they had a song they had a Christmas song. And a local company wanted to use that song in their e-greeting, to wish, you know, all their employees and partners a happy holiday. And yeah, that was a $2,000 sync that we gave them. You know, it was just a video, and they used this Christmas song from the band I managed, the Howleys. And you know, that $2,000, you know, that paid for some barbecue and some sandwiches and paid to fix their van, which, $2,000 is not a huge number even for a local brand.
But it can really make a difference for a local artist or for any artist, you know, for that's starting artist. Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
It's that's real currency. That spins. Well, that's great. So tell me, what are you up to? Is there anything that you're doing that you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. So I should probably talk a little bit about my role at Reverb Nation, where I'm working on our artist development team. But ultimately, you know, we have 5 million artists on the platform, and we're continuing to grow pretty rapidly. And really with Reverb Nation, we are really focused on helping artists develop their career and providing opportunities for artists to take those next steps. So, you know, we have the opportunities section of our site where artists can submit to basically be considered for festivals and record labels and publishers and all of that jazz. So, you know, what I would say is we have usually 160 opportunities running at any given moment. So, you know, there's certainly opportunities for artists to get discovered on our platform. And, you know, I think one thing with submissions that a lot of artists think is, no one actually listens to those. And the thing that, you know, I'd love to share is, you know, we actually have a curation team that's 32 curators, and they're from the music industry. And we recognize that bigger brand names like a Bonnaroo or Pepsi or, you know, someone like that, or even radio, you know, they don't have the time to listen to tens of thousands of artists, but we do. And what we can do is really understand, you know, what someone like Bonnaroo or Pepsi or a record label like Atlantic or Fierce Panda is looking for, and we can make targeted recommendations. And, you know, your music may, you know, be an exact fit or it may not. So, but what I would say is our curation team is actually listening to every single artist that submits to one of our opportunities. And when we find the right opportunity, assuming you submit and we see you pop up, you know, we would love to make a recommendation to help connect the right artist with the right opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I can attest that I, like, in the last year, I haven't been putting out as much music as I'd like, but I did use the feedback tool that you guys offer.
Yeah.
And that's just really invaluable feedback. I mean, you're getting some real, you know, first off, the people are real that are listening to it, and, you know, and they're giving you their thoughts, and by and large, it's great feedback. But I did also, after submitting to that, I got an email from one of the curators saying, "Hey, we like the song. We're going to look at you guys closer." And, you know, we never heard anything back after that because we have so little content up on Reverb Nation right now.
Sure.
But, you know, it's one of those things where, you guys really do. I mean, somebody's working really hard, because for somebody to take the time to say, "Hey, we like this. We're going to check this out further." It's encouraging when you get that. And it's also just nice to know that it's not just you guys are just some technology company that's, you know, needs content flowing through there for your lifeblood, but it actually means something.
Yeah. And I mean, for us, I'm glad you mentioned the feedback tool. You know, we have a variety of tools that we're developing. You know, we have a tool called Promote It, where, you know, rather than you guessing at, you know, the right geographic demographic for you to, you know, spend money for Facebook advertising or, you know, to get yourself banner space on sites like The Fader, we have Promote It, which will basically really understand the style of music that you're playing and help optimize that and make sure that you're, you know, getting your money's worth, you know. And we have distribution, and, you know, we have a variety of other ways that artists can use our platform and help connect with the industry. And by the way, I would tell you, with your music, you know, the fact that a curator reached out, you know, that's not abnormal. You know, the one thing I tell artists all the time is, and this goes not only for Reverb Nation, but, you know, we live in a time where music is a utility. So you need to treat your music like a utility, and don't put it all out at once if you only have 5 songs. You know, roll it out slowly. We have a lot of algorithms that will trigger based on updates to profiles. So what I tell artists is constantly be updating, like updating your Facebook or anything else. You know, I'm not talking about posts, but I'm talking about, you know, post a new picture, post a new song, sync your account with Bands in Town, so that way we can see when you have new tour dates.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so the other thing I would tell you about what I'm working on is over the past 3 years, I've been starting to dive into the podcast space as well. You know, I've got a couple in development, but, you know, certainly got a podcast that I work on with Andrew Lou Goldham, the original producer of the Rolling Stones, producer and manager of the Rolling Stones.
Yes.
Called Sounds and Vision. And we're treating each episode as kind of a masterclass from someone Andrew's met along the way. So you can get photography advice from Mick Rock, who shot all the famous images of David Bowie and Freddie Mercury and Queen and Syd Barrett. You know, we have an episode with Danny Goldberg, who managed Nirvana and manages Steve Earle. And he shares lots of stories from the road. You know, we have an episode with Rob Schwartz, who is the CEO of TBWA Chiat Day, which is a huge ad agency. And he really breaks down, you know, how he and Andrew have both used music for marketing. That would be one thing I'd love for people to check out, that podcast. And, you know, I've got a couple others I'm working on, too. I do a podcast called The Outpost from the Burbs, which is a folk series from Montclair, New Jersey. And that's more just an interview and a live performance. And the first season had everyone from Richard Thompson to Riley Walker, a young emerging artist in that space. You know, also I produce a podcast for my wife called Le Vital Corps Salon, which is conversations between my wife, Kara, and other type A women, not letting BS or burnout stop them. So she's spoken up to everyone from astronauts to climate scientists to the first woman to race in the Kentucky Derby. And there's a lot of lessons that can be taken away from those episodes as well.
Absolutely. Very well produced material and content.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and don't forget to mention your freshly minted blog.
Yeah, so I'm trying to put more of my ideas out into the world. And if you go to craigsays.blog, you'll see a couple posts up there. I'm probably not going to be posting weekly, but you know, definitely see a couple posts each month. And you can also follow me on Medium, where I'm going to be sharing select pieces of those blogs. And, you know, certainly we'll be advertising them on all of my social media, which I'm sure you'll include somewhere in the show notes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Craig. This is great.
Yeah. Thanks for creating this. And I'm excited to see how this grows for you and how we can educate artists about just how to make some money with their music.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the end goal. That's it. This is Steve Cleveland, and you've been listening to Sync Club. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you check out our show notes, where you can find additional information and links regarding our guest. Hey, let us know what you'd like to hear about. You can do so by hitting us up at Twitter, username Sync Club Podcast. Thanks for the hang. We'll see you here next week at the club.